Welcome to the River Mountain Church Preaching Library. It is our prayer and indeed our hope that this message might inspire your life. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the preaching of God's Word.
I have been, this message kind of has been stirring in my mind for many months. And I actually wrote the title to this message back in October. You know, the old saying is you can't finish unless you start. So, you know, you open up a PowerPoint presentation, you pull open a slide, you type in the title, and then nothing happens for several weeks. So integrity, where have you gone? These were kind of my pre-election thoughts. You know, we were all immersed in the election, the presidential election in early November. We're reading the newspaper, we're reading our iPads and our iPhones, and we're searching the internet. And, you know, some of the other things that on a parallel course I was dealing with at work, you know, I knew I was on a path to retirement. And one of the many things that was driving me to realize I was making the right decision was we were in the process of drafting a new employee handbook. We had one established in 2010, and it was about 18 pages long. And here we were redoing it in 2020, and it was 35 pages long. And the reason why it was so much longer is because we had to make all these provisions to close all the loopholes that all the employees took advantage of. And then the problem is that if you're going to create more rules, now you're going to have to spend more time documenting and enforcing more rules. And the company was just going in a direction that was contrary to my spirit. And I don't like the direction that we're going. I certainly, obviously being the president of the company, could do a lot to push back. But the reality was that we had to deal with the circumstances that we were presented with. And we had a lot of employees where the word integrity was not high on their list. So we had to have rules and regulations. There's some words synonymous with integrity. Honesty, strong moral principles, honorable moral uprightness, incorruptibility, character, decency, goodness, honesty, righteousness, and virtue. Wow. Imagine if we lived in a society where we had a lot of integrity and you saw and heard these words. This is a Christian-based society. Antonyms, these are the opposite of integrity. Badness, evil, evil doing, immorality, sin, wickedness. What type of society do we live in? The words synonymous with integrity or these words? On October 29th, in a way to kind of drive home the fact that this was the right message for today. I read a book by Tony Dungy, and this is kind of where our men's group, we get the uncommon men. This Tony Dungy has a book called Uncommon Life. It's daily reading. And October 29th, the daily reading was No Rules Required. And right away, that kind of perked my interest, and I'd been praying. I said, God, I said, I need something here. I can't just go and stand up before the congregation and have one slide, integrity, where have you gone? I got to have more. And this daily reading gave me a little bit more. The Bible verse for that day was Galatians 5:1. Christ has truly set us free. Now make sure you stay free and don't get tied up again in slavery to the law. Integrity has no need of rules. Rules are designed to keep behavior in order. Don't focus on keeping the rules. Focus on becoming a person of strong character that the rules aren't even necessary. You know, Tony Dungy said that when he was drafting players and recruiting players and trying to assemble players for a Super Bowl run, he was looking for players with integrity, players that he didn't have to tell them what to do. They did what was right automatically. They had that moral compass. And the locker room, when it was filled with players with integrity, was a locker room of success. And I should have looked up how many times he went to the Super Bowl and how many times he won the Super Bowl, but in hindsight, the years when he was most successful were the years where he had the most number of players in that locker room with integrity. And again, translate that to your work life, to your home life. You know, this is the type of company that I wanted to be the president of, a company that the employees have integrity, and a company that you don't have to worry about the employees coming to work on time. You don't have to worry about the employees putting in a good day's work. The employees have integrity. But here we are. This is a snapshot or a screenshot of the comparison of a stack of papers that represented the rules and regulations from the federal government in 1960, which is the small stack on the left, kind of knee-high, and the red line going up to the stack of papers that represent the rules and regulations of the federal government in 2017. So, again, if integrity means you don't need rules and regulations, but yet look at our federal government, you know, we are not on the path of having a lot of integrity in our government. There's an old saying in the coal mining business, and it's probably prevalent in a lot of businesses, those that can create, those that can't regulate. And that's what's happened. We have a lot of people, you know, we have a lot of creative people. People that are mining products, people that are cutting down trees to make the wood that we all need to make furniture, to build houses, a lot of creative people. But then think how much our regulatory agencies have grown over the years. So how did this happen? What's going on? What can I do? You know, you feel frustrated. You feel like a drop in the ocean. You know, do I get into government? Do I become a hermit? What do I do? I mean, all of us have that mentality. We all want to make things better. What can I do? What can we do? We know what the answer is, right? I mean, as a spirit-filled, born-again believer, we know that Jesus Christ is the answer. We all have seen examples in our lives of families that have been put back together, of people whose lives have turned around because of the saving grace of Jesus Christ. We all know that. We all know that. But notice how I finish that sentence. But. Belief in the Bible has been eroded by an increasing belief in evolution versus creation. And I'm shifting gears on you here a little bit, and I'm really kind of getting to what the rest of my message will be about. Because of this integrity, where have you gone, and what has happened with businesses, what has happened with the government, what has happened with our society. We all know what the answer is, but creation versus evolution. Evolutionary teaching has thrown up a lot of roadblocks in our lives. I'm a child of the 60s and the 70s, which is when my elementary school, middle school, high school, college years were. And I can remember the professors, and it's interesting because there's a lot of people now that preach environmentalism with the same desire, you might say. But I can remember the professors more or less saying to me as a college student that evolution was fact, evolution was science, evolution, you know. And the problem with that is, and there I am, I wasn't a believer at that time. I was Presbyterian. I had gone to church when my parents went to church, and you know, I believed that there was a God, and yet my thinking started to be challenged, and my thinking started to erode, and I became one of those type of people that's there's an acronym for it, HTR, hard to receive. All right. Because I had these mental questions, like, well, you know, if the Bible's not factual, then, you know, it really opens a Pandora's box, unfortunately. But, you know, do we literally believe in a six-day creation? Do we believe that there was an Adam and an Eve? Do we believe that there was a worldwide flood? Do we believe in the Tower of Babel? Who's behind evolution? And I kind of chose the smallest font I could, the devil. How did this happen? Incrementalism. You know, centuries ago, evolution, the theory of evolution, what started as a theory, you know, they had different terminology they used. One of the first ones they used was gap view. In other words, they tried to explain away, you know, did God really create the earth in 6 days? They tried to explain that away by saying there were indefinite long periods of time between Genesis 1 and Genesis 1-2. And then there was another theory that said day-age view. Day was a long period of time. Day really didn't mean day. And they start to pollute your mind with this type of teaching. Day meant day. You can't use a word like day. The first time God used the word day was right in the beginning of Genesis. You can't use a new word symbolically before you've used it factually. And God laid out a 7-day period for how our life goes. We work for 6, we rest for 1. You know, if day meant a million years, does that mean we're supposed to work for 6 million years and then rest for a million? You know, it just doesn't make any sense. But yet, these are the types of things that started to erode Christianity. Then they came up with the phrase progressive creation. God's creation occurred over a very long period of time because men couldn't fathom how God could create everything in 6 days. We just couldn't fathom it. So there had to be another example. Really didn't mean 6 days. It really meant over a long period of time. Then they coined another term, theistic evolution. This was an attempt by the church in the 19th century to merge Christian doctrines with Darwin's history. Again, compromise. And there's really never much good that happens once you start to compromise, especially as a church. And then the next thing that was in evolutionary teaching, which was in line with theistic evolution, is atheistic evolution, where they just, again, incrementalism, we're nibbling away at this thing. Atheistic evolution says there is no God. We are the results of chance. We own ourselves. Man can be his own judge, his own master, center of his own existence. And I've had conversations with atheists, and the one thing I always say to them, and it kind of takes them aback a little bit, as I always say, I admire your faith. And they're kind of like, well, I'm an atheist. I don't believe in God. And I said, yeah, but you have to have a lot of faith to believe that we all emerged out of some primordial swamp, and then we became this, and then we became that, and we evolved to this, and we evolved to that, and here we are. And then the life around us, everything we see around us is examples of order, and yet we evolved out of chance and disorder, and none of that makes sense. Here's the verse that kind of helps and goes along with that, John 3:19. This is the verdict, that light has come into the world, and men love darkness more than light because their deeds were evil. What indeed started to happen is things that, you know, the Bible, you know, dictated history. And it always amazes me where schools don't even mention the word or the name Jesus Christ. Don't even recognize the historical significance of this man. And that unto itself means a little bit, because there's power in that name. And it's a lot easier to just not mention it. You know, why do we call it 2020 AD? Why did we call things 200 BC? It's because our time changed. Our methodology of keeping time, it was BC before Christ or AD after death. And people nowadays are even hesitant to use that when they're describing, you know, you hear people, you know, this is the year of our Lord 2021. You don't hear that much anymore, and you're starting to hear less and less of 2021 AD, because, again, it recognizes the significance of Jesus Christ and what he did while he was on this earth. But what, again, it has relegated is the story of Adam and Eve has been relegated to symbolism, mythology, and not thought of as history. All these things are eroding everyone's thinking. Think of the people that are not saved yet, and they're bumping through life, and yet they keep running into these barriers of, well, you know, the Bible's not true. It's just a book of mythology, and you know, they start to self-doubt. And so therefore, why would I want to be saved? What's the purpose? If the books in the Bible are mythology and they're not really factual, which is what the evolutionists teach me, then why? And it just prolongs. I mean, I'm not saying, just like the Saul, Paul example, you know, you can be walking down the road and God could strike you blind and knock you out, and you can have an amazing conversion. That still happens. And then will continue to happen. But for me, you know, it took me many years, maybe many decades. You know, I knew God. I knew of God. And I went through college, and I went through life, and I had all these questions with no answers. But they were all evolutionary teaching based. And they got inside my brain, and they rotted it. And they slowed down, you know, my progression from being, you know, an unbelieving Christian to being saved, you know, to where I am today. But it's unfortunate. It just really can slow down and prevent the move from a person from being not a Christian to being a Christian. And the second sentence here, essential Christian doctrines rest on the biblical views of events as presented in Genesis. Evolution is a barrier to people believing in a creator God. Let me get my glasses on here. If people stop believing in the Bible as an historical, God-inspired book, they begin to believe that it's filled with fables, fairy tales, myths, and therefore of no use. That's a sad testimony. I have a little cartoon here. I need to give credit to where I got it. I'm reading the book. Well, I've actually read and reread this book, The Lie, Evolution by Ken Ham. I recommend it highly. In that book is this cartoon. And I'm glad I just opened the page and took a snapshot of it with my iPhone, and I'm glad it came out good. But it kind of has a nice way of bringing home everything I've been trying to say here. On the left, you've got a castle, the evolution castle, you know, Satan. And on the right, you've got the creation castle, Christ. And the Christians in the castle, one guy at the top, he's shooting, who knows what he's shooting at. Another guy, he's shooting up at the balloons that are flying above the evolution castle, you know, abortion, pornography, racism, homosexuality, he's shooting at those balloons. We got a guy up there in the middle of the castle who's aiming at the foundation of evolution, but he's not shooting. Whereas over in the evolutionary castle, we got one guy with a cannon, and what's he shooting at? He's shooting at the foundation of Christianity. He's shooting at Genesis. He's shooting at creation. Here's some of the things we can we can say that evolution brought us, or evolutionary teaching or evolutionary thinking has brought us. Nazism. Hitler believed that what he was doing was correct. Hitler believed that evolutionary morality justified what he did to the Jews. He believed in survival of the stronger. He believed that the German race, the Aryan race, was superior, stronger than the Jews, and the Jews needed to be eradicated. He honestly believed he was doing the right thing. Racism. Aborigines. Who's seen the movie Quigley Down Under? Oh, come on. Okay? When Great Britain colonized Australia, they believed that the Aboriginal people were an example, you know, because evolution was the thing. So they believed that the Aborigines were an example of a lesser race of people and therefore could be eradicated. The Mongolians, I'll come back to that. Black Africans, American Indians, all were believed to be a throwback to a previous stage of evolution and therefore mentally defective. This is mankind. This is our thinking. Think of the difference if we all believed that there's only one race, the human race, and we are all descendants of the same parents. Think of the difference. No Nazism, no racism. Certainly different ethnicities, different cultures, but one race, human race. Drug use became very prevalent, you know, in the 60s, 70s. Man's made-up source of comfort and creativity. Once the Bible was abandoned, considered unscientific and therefore of no use. Man is always searching for meaning. Drugs became that new source of meaning. Abortion. Evolutionists teach that the embryo in the mother's womb goes through evolutionary stages until it becomes a human being. Therefore, they can go back to that, oh, it's just a mass of cells. There's even evolutionary teaching that says that the embryo even goes through a fish stage where it has gills and therefore is not a human yet. And then I wrote underneath that Planned Parenthood, Margaret Sanger, and you know she's always thought of as the founder of Planned Parenthood, and her main goal was population control. And I don't want to get into the details of her life, maybe on a different day, but actually Planned Parenthood has tried to push their relationship with her away. She was an evil person. Business practices, again, examples of what evolution has brought us. Survival of the fittest in business. Elimination of the weak, no love for the poor. I think of examples, you know, that Industrial Revolution, coal mining, Tamaqua, Irish, Italians, you know, different classes thought of, different classes of people. Steel making. You know, you had the very, very, very wealthy and you had the workers. And the very, very, very wealthy and the owners of these companies, again, felt justified because these other people were not quite as evolved as they were. So evolution and evolutionary teaching has brought us a lot of bad things. Teaching evolution as scientific fact has become one of the biggest barriers to today's people being receptive to the gospel of Jesus Christ. It has eroded people's belief in the Bible and placed barriers in their minds that prevent the salvation message falling on good ground or good soil. You know, I've talked with Pastor Tom about this. I've talked with several other pastors about just this. And they say that they do see, you know, we don't get a lot of new visitors here, but when we move to a new building, we will get new visitors. And you get people coming in with this kind of baggage. You've got people coming in with this evolutionary taught mindset, and they come in and they don't believe in the factual nature of what's in this book. So what can we do? Before I go on, when I talk about the the barriers of the salvation message falling on good ground, I just wanted to reread the story of the farmer. We've all read it before, and I've highlighted in yellow, and I'll read that. Other seeds fell among the thorns. The thorns grew up and crowded out the plants. There's nothing wrong with the seed. The seed is the gospel message. It's the soil that it falls on. Evolutionary teaching is the thorns that chokes out and doesn't allow the seeds to grow. How do we as Christians push back? Again, I mentioned, you know, like I could go into government, I could become a hermit, but here's a third choice. Creation evangelism. It enables us to prepare the ground so the good seed can be scattered and a great harvest reaped. Establish the creation foundation upon which the rest of the gospel can be built. I've heard Pastor Tom say it numerous times, if it's in the Bible, I believe it. And I've heard him say it, and I'm telling you today as I stand here, I'm going to start saying the same thing. If it's in the Bible, I believe it. I'm pushing away all this evolutionary stuff. All the thinking that rattles around in my brain that doesn't align with what's in the Bible, I'm pushing it away. Some of the references that I used today, obviously, were that was Ken Ham, and again, if any of you are on Facebook, if you get the there's a website, it's called isgenesishistory.com, Creation Ministries is another important one. But let me read verbatim here what I wrote to myself. I had sent this PowerPoint presentation to Pastor Tom more than a week ago, and I had written this afterwards. For 2021 and beyond, I plan to direct my studies to become more knowledgeable and a proponent of creation evangelism. As we move into our new building and begin to have adult Sunday school and have foundational Bible-based teaching, creation studies will be critical. By knocking down the barriers of secular-based evolutionary teaching, it will create a superhighway to salvation for many people and firmly establish the Bible as a God-inspired, historically accurate template to live our lives.
Thanks for listening to this message from River Mountain Church. If you'd like some more information, visit our website, rivermountainchurch.org.